Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy. Well, if you fell into a coma in 2012 and woke up last weekend and started watching golf, you'd be saying, hey, nothing's changed. Phil Mickelson, Michelle Wee, and Steve Stricker were all winners. Now, I'm surprised Stricker's first PGA Tour Champions win took this long. I mean, the guy hits the ball straight as a string, is a demon with his wedges, and is a legendary putter. And on that tour, length is not an issue for anyone. Perhaps the distraction of being a President's Cup captain took his attention. I don't know. Anyway, don't be surprised if this is the first of many in a hurry for Steve Stricker. Michelle Wee. You know, nothing would be better for the LPGA than for her to become a consistent performer. But injuries and staying healthy, they've been the entire story of her career. So we'll just have to wait and see. And Phil, I got to eat crow on this one. 4 years ago, I announced him as done. D-O-N-E, done. And I've been looking like a prescient genius ever since, until last week. For the first time since that amazing and unexpected win at Muirfield in the Open Championship in 2013, Phil Mickelson was the one left standing and hoisting a trophy on Sunday. Now, I'm still not convinced that this is a career renaissance. I'm certainly not on board with his assertion that he'll get to 50 wins. He now has 43. And I'm certainly not thinking that he's found a way to become the very first person to defeat Father Time. Phil's 47 years old. But a win is a win, and he's the second most important golfer of the last 30 years, so his victory is nothing, nothing but good for the game. We'll talk about these three and more with John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. Also this week, we'll hear from Mike Zimke, the golf director for the upcoming Strawberry Festival tournament in Fort Mill, one of the first really great spring tournaments in the area. But we begin today with an old friend, David Woosley. Wooz. He's been on the show many times. He's a professional caddy. He's been on the bag in big situations on big stages like major championships and Ryder Cups. He also has an uncanny eye for young talent. And if you saw the final round of the Honda a couple of weeks ago, and you saw young Sam Burns outplay Tiger Woods in that round, you may have caught a glimpse of Wooz on the bag. We had the chance to catch up about a week ago. Wooz, if there's one thing that I've learned about you in the last couple of years, is that you have a magnificent eye for young, up-and-coming golf talent. You were talking to... No, I'm serious. You were talking to me about Grayson Murray at least 2 years before anybody else even knew who Grayson Murray was. There was somebody else about a year ago that I went, ah, yeah, Dave told me about him. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, if you look at who was sharing the spotlight with Joe LaCava and Tiger Woods last weekend, it was a new up-and-coming player named Sam Burns from LSU and somebody on the bag named David Woosley. Where do you find these guys?
I know, it's crazy, right? I mean, you know, what's been happening for me is the last few years, I had not been on the PGA Tour, and but doesn't mean that I was completely inactive. And what I have been doing, along with a little bit of club caddying at Quail Hollow, is I've been connected to some really good college players. And that started with a young fellow from Vanderbilt, a number of years ago, which kind of morphed into a guy named Hunter Stewart, who, like a couple years ago, was the Walker Cup team and SEC Player of the Year. And I caddied for him in some PGA Tour events. He finished ninth in his third event. You know, that's a different story. But anyway, he made a swing change, and as swing changes go, it takes a time to adjust. That's what he's doing now, Hunter Stewart. But I did work some amateur events with Hunter Stewart, and I was in the Players' Championship with Hunter, and Sam Burns was playing. This was, I would say, 3 or 4 years ago. Very impressive guy, Sam Burns. And so, yeah, that's kind of what happened. But what actually happened was at the tournament in Washington, D.C. About, I don't know, 6 or so months ago, the PGA Tour event. I was up there looking for work, and I was on the range, and there's Justin Thomas, and I know Jimmy Johnson, and just stepped up to say hello to those guys. And Jimmy said to me, Justin's caddy said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm looking for work." And he literally pulled out his cell phone. He'd just gotten a text. And the text said simply that Sam Burns is in the Barbasol and he needs a caddy. And I'm sure he probably perhaps was surprised, but I said, "Well, I know Sam Burns and I know his dad." And literally, Jimmy Johnson said, "Perfect." You know, and the next thing I know, a couple hours later, Mr. Burns was calling me. And, you know, I guess I'm sure I would imagine Jimmy recommended me. But anyway, Mr. Burns said Sam's going to play in the Barbasol as an amateur. And he's 20 years old. And we'd love to have you caddy for him. And by the way, if things work out, we would like you to consider moving forward working for Sam because he's going to turn pro immediately after the Walker Cup. And I said, "Yeah, I mean, obviously I would love to do that." I went to the Barbasol, and Sam finished tied for sixth as a 20-year-old. And it was like, it was just, I mean, it was just way better than just tied for sixth. He just played, he was so skillful and competitive. For 72 holes, and it was very exciting, and then we've just kind of carried on from there.
David Woosley, my man Woos, professional caddy, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Now, Woos, you know, you come to this from a very interesting perspective in that, you know, you caddied for one of the top players in the world in the late 80s and early 90s when Chip Beck was on top of his game. That was a long time ago. What is the biggest difference between the top players in the world today, or the young kids today, and the top players and young kids from then?
Well, I can just, you know, talk from my experience, like, for instance, with Sam Burns at the Barbasol. My understanding is his four-day total, which was, I believe, 19 under par, his four-day total is the lowest score for an amateur, four-day total score for an amateur in the history of the PGA Tour. And he was ready to go. And when I caddied for Chip Beck his rookie year, or, you know, Aaron Oberholzer, Sam Burns was 20, and he was very competitive. And just this past Sunday, in a very big, and you know, very big stage with Tiger Woods, and Tiger Woods has a chance to win on Sunday in his basically his hometown. You know, Sam Burns was neck and neck with him, and he actually beat Tiger that day, total score. And they're just ready to go. I mean, they are competitive. Seems like they're not just skillful. They work hard. They have an attitude of, you know, let's do this type thing, and they're not afraid of the leaderboard, and by gosh, you know, Sam proved that, and I think that's a big difference.
I think what blew me away was there are big stages.
Right.
There's no bigger stage than playing with Tiger Woods. If for people who have never been out there and seen what a Tiger Woods gallery is like, there's no way you could prepare for that environment. You've never seen it before, where there are 10 and 12 deep lining every hole you play. I mean, was there anything you said to him prior to the round to try to calm him down? Did you need to calm him down? What was he like on the range before the round started?
Well, you know, Bob Rotella was there. And so I think they have a relationship, Sam and Mr. Rotella, I believe that was helpful for me. You know, I'm connected to Aaron Oberholzer. I've been trying to connect Aaron Oberholzer with Sam Burns since I started with Sam. We were supposed to get together in San Diego, but Sam missed the cut. But that morning, I texted Oberholzer, and he had some really wise things to say to share with Sam. I think he was waiting for Sam to contact him, but Sam's kind of shy. So Aaron Oberholzer sent this stuff to me, and I forwarded it to Sam and Sam's swing coach. And I think Sam found that so helpful that he ended up calling Aaron, you know, before the round and just start, you know, and basically stuff like, you know, you just kind of need to expect the unexpected. You need to, you know, surrender to what's going on because it's going to be, you know, pretty loud and crazy. And, you know, commit to your golf shots. He also made a point to say you need to putt out every time that you can before Tiger finishes, which was very good advice. And then, you know, what I also shared with Sam, and Aaron knows this because Tiger really liked Aaron, but I shared with Sam that Tiger will talk on the course. He's a good guy to talk to, and he'll definitely talk, but you have to initiate the conversation. He's not going to initiate it. And so Sam was talking to him, like, right off the first tee. He had some funny quip, I think, that was reported in the press, and I know Joe LaCava very well. He's a good guy, and so we just, and Sam, you know, Tiger, I think, made about a 20-footer for birdie on the first hole, and Sam had a 3-footer. He made his, and then we were up first on the first hole, so we were up first on the second hole, and Sam ripped his shot right down the middle and hit his second shot about 18 feet, and I knew he was good to go. And so, to be honest, it was easy for me, and all I had to do was caddy.
David Woosley is Sam Burns' caddy. Sam played with Tiger Woods last week and finished, well, I think he finished T8, so top 10. So you'll be playing in the Valspar next week. David, affectionately known as Woos, is our guest taking Dead Aim. I was going to ask you specifically about Tiger, and you may have already answered the question. In watching this latest incarnation of the Tiger Woods comeback, and I'm not saying that he wasn't accommodating or rude to his playing partners before, because I think he kind of went out of his way on occasion because he knew what a circus it was. But it seems to me that he is much more relaxed and is, I don't know if he's concerned about doing, but he seems to be really aware of putting his playing competitors at ease with playing with him now. I noticed it in the highlights from Sunday. I noticed it on Friday and Saturday when I was watching replay of the coverage. Is that what you noticed as well? Is Tiger a different Tiger to his playing competitors than he was before?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that Overholser texted to me to share with Sam. It was the last thing in an extended text. And Aaron said that, in his opinion, Tiger had changed. He's not trying to annihilate people like Sam anymore. He's more, I think he said that he sees himself more as a mentor. And I felt that, and I love that. I've loved Tiger Woods. I've always just, I mean, he's like a transformative, not just athlete, but I won't get into that now. But, yeah, I think he... I think he's changed. I think he's grown. And I think that's, I mean, the tour is a different PGA Tour when he's there, and I think most everybody wants him back. My reflection on his game, we saw him Wednesday morning before his Pro-Am in San Diego. We were right next to him. The sun wasn't even up yet, but I was watching Tiger. It looked to me at that time like he was wincing at impact. And I mentioned that to somebody else, and they said that they thought they saw that as well. But nevertheless, I was paying really close attention Sunday, and I didn't see any of that. And I think he's playing really well, and I think he's so darn close. And I think most everybody's really pulling for him. And obviously he's shooting for being in full form at the Masters, and it's exciting stuff.
One more question about Tiger, then I want to get back to your man. In terms of how well he played, and I just saw highlights of the final round. Like I told you, I was listening on PGA Tour radio on my way back from the beach. But in listening to the commentary and seeing the highlights, unlike the previous tournaments where Tiger would have loose shots, it seemed that down the stretch, he got that one bogey to get the birdie back at 14 and get back to -3. And then he rinsed the one at 15. But it wasn't due to a poor shot. It may have been due to poor club selection. I really think he was trying to post a number. He said, okay, I'm going to try to get to -6 and post it and see what's happening. And so I looked at his progress as this was Tiger Woods losing a tournament while trying to win it, as opposed to, you know, just rinsing a ball because he fanned an iron shot. Is that what you took from being right there with him as well?
Well, he darn sure was. He was definitely trying to win it. That doesn't mean he didn't hit loose shots.
Oh, no, I was specifically speaking of the shot on 15.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. So we're standing on 15T, and Tiger's up, and he's got a 6-iron out. And Sam was asking me, I mean, we were hitting the same clubs as Tiger was. And Sam was like, "What, you know, what do you think of this shot? What, you know, you I mean," and I said to him, and we were far enough away, you know, the pin was front right, the water is right. And I said to Sam that, in my opinion, Tiger's going to go, like, right at the pin with a cut shot, with a 6-iron, which is what he did. And I think it was the right club. And, you know, Jack Nicklaus was saying that, you know, probably it was the wrong target, but I would even disagree with that. I think he was just trying to stuff it. And he just barely missed it. So, yeah, he was definitely trying to win the tournament. And I think that that's exciting because I think, you know, that's a possibility moving forward, obviously.
David Woosley, Sam Burns caddy. Woos is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's get back to your man. He's full-time on the web.com tour, but he's been able to get some sponsor exemptions and doesn't have to waste one at the Valspar. But just going over what he's done so far, had a top 50 at Sanderson Farms, a top 20 in Vegas, missed the cut at the Farmers, a T8, as we mentioned, at the Honda. At the rate he's going and looking at his game, and I was so impressed with how composed he was playing with Tiger, Woos, we're not far from, you know, maybe if he squeezes at another top 10, top 20, you know, at Bay Hill, does the same thing at the Valspar, we could kiss the web.com tour goodbye early, couldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, ideally that's what we're, you know, shooting for. As you said, he did automatically get an extra spot that doesn't count against sponsor invites. So he's playing in the Tampa event. And then Monday after this past week, his agent, they got a call, and he's got a sponsor invite at Orlando. But then, you're right, he has status on the web, not the PGA Tour. So we're going to go three in a row. The third tournament will be the web.com event in Louisiana because we... You know, as his father was saying, we have to protect that top 25. We got to get it done on the web. It's not, it's a very high bar to go straight through the PGA Tour. But obviously, I mean, this is the way I look at it. He's played in five PGA Tour events that I've worked for him. He finished sixth at the Barbasol. He finished eighth in a big event last week. Two top tens out of five PGA Tour events. Obviously, he can do it again. And it's really exciting stuff, but, you know, he's got to keep his head down and just, you know, go through this process and play good golf.
He's a caddy's caddy. That's David Woosley, my man Woos. And when we return, Phil, Michelle, Stricker, Tiger, and more with the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. One person I can always trust to never be lacking for an opinion on anything in the game of golf is John Patrick, the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. John, last week watching professional golf, if you had fallen asleep at around 2011, 2012, 2013, and you woke up, you'd have thought you hadn't missed a thing when you see Michelle Wee and Phil Mickelson win on the same weekend. How wild was that?
I thought it was great. And Steve Stricker.
Yes!
I thought it was wonderful. I'm fans of all of them. It's great for the game. I'm sorry Michelle's happened in the middle of the night, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I really did. It was great fun.
What has Phil tapped into this year that has been missing for, honestly, the last four and a half years? I mean, he had, what, four consecutive top six finishes coming in to last week and then, you know, survived a playoff with the hottest player on the planet and won. I mean, this is a Phil we haven't seen in quite a while.
I don't think it's magic, though. I really think he's just playing better golf. I think his golf swing is better. I think his putting is better. One of the things I thought about with the playoff this week and heard someone say, and I wholeheartedly agree with it, I think Phil schooled Justin a little bit on that playoff hole. I think they were both full of adrenaline, probably especially Phil. And then you watch Justin just, you know, hammer a gap wedge over that green. Phil goes pin high on him. I thought that was a great moment. The teacher and the pupil, and I think Justin learned by that. But I think it's easy. I think Phil is swinging better. He's got this new coach. I think he's swinging better. I think he's putting better. I don't think it's that complicated.
I used to say about Dustin Johnson before he won his first major, he won it in a way I didn't think would happen. I always thought that the major would win him before he won the major. Like, he would go out, shoot a low number, a couple of groups out, and be the last guy standing and win a trophy. And I was proven to be wrong by that with the way he handled Oakmont. But I bring that up because Phil Mickelson's body language and the look on his face during that playoff was one of someone who didn't go out and win it. He just kind of survived it. It was a passive aggressive Phil that we've never seen before. Before, the Phil we used to know and love would have tried to hit a cut wedge into that back left pin and take it on and try to win that playoff outright with a birdie that was stuck close. After JT put it in the granooch behind the green, he was more than content to just sort of play the odds, and Phil's never been one to do that.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I think it all... First of all, I think when he made the birdie putt that got him to within one, I think he was really jacked up. And I see where you're coming from, but I really do think he just... He saw what Justin hit first, and Justin blew it over the green, and he's like, I'm going to be pin high, and I'm going to, yeah, I may make this putt. But you know what? A par isn't going to lose this hole.
It's kind of stupid to say this. We're talking about a guy who has three green jackets. But do you think that this indeed makes him more confident heading into the Masters than he would have been?
Oh, I think it makes him more confident. You know, I saw you tweeted, and I guess I was a part of this. You tweeted that, you know, you asked everybody at the end of the year, you know, that Phil was 1.5 over under on Phil's victory.
It's been my favorite question for 3 years.
And I guess we all said under.
Yes.
I'm still saying under. I mean, because the years he won here at Augusta, he didn't win again the rest of the year. So I'm gonna say this was his major, and unless he finds a way to get jacked up about the Ryder Cup, he's not gonna win at Shinnecock. Unless he finds a way to get jacked up about the Ryder Cup, which I think he will, then maybe we'll see something. But I'm not gonna be surprised at all if he doesn't win again this year. I think this might have been his Masters major, and he will coast on this for a while until it comes time to, you know, hone in on the Ryder Cup, which he may have done already. He may be miles closer to that than he ever was.
John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking dead aim. Michelle Wee, she also won. Barring a miracle where she goes on a huge 2-year run of winning and is injury free, barring that, will we always look at someone like Michelle Wee with the specter of what might have been or what could have been?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I don't know how fair that is. I think she is a class study and how this can all go wrong and why it's so tenuous and why it's so fragile. And why we get it wrong. I mean, everything that was made of her as a 14-year-old and a 15-year-old and what should have been. It isn't easy. It really isn't easy. The more you know these men and women that attempt to do this, and Phil said it, and they also, and Steve said it at the Champions event. You know, winning on any level isn't easy. So I think it's more of a study of how tough this is, and we rarely factor in, because it's golf, we rarely factor in injuries, and what that can do to a career. Maybe we're better at it with Michelle and with Tiger and things like that, but that doesn't come up much when you talk about potential and what can be. Maybe we should say they got to stay healthy. I think that's a bigger issue. I do think her swing is better. I do think her putting is better. It's at least looks much better.
It doesn't look like you'll be in traction for 6 months if you do it for 18 holes.
No. So I think she's playing a better brand of golf. But now, can she stay injury free? She, like Tiger, is, you know, you get up in the morning and all of a sudden you hear a story. Oh, this is hurts or that hurts, and she's got the tape all over her body now. So I just think it's more of a how hard this is to make this happen.
John, you bring up Tiger Woods. Earlier in the show, we were talking with David Woosley, who used to caddy for Chip Beck in Chip's glory years in the late 80s and early 90s. And now he's on the bag for young Sam Burns. And he was with Tiger in the final round at the Honda a couple of weeks ago. And David, who's not one for hyperbole or not one to say that something looks good when it doesn't or look bad when it isn't, he was pretty bullish on what Tiger looked like, and he saw dramatic improvement from warming up next to him on the range at Torrey and playing with him on Sunday at the Honda. Does what Phil Mickelson pulled off this last weekend, does it inspire Tiger more or put more pressure on Tiger to be better faster?
I don't think he cares.
I don't either.
I don't think he cares. I mean, it's his world. He lives in his world. It doesn't really matter what anybody else does. I stand by the. I'm surprised at this return and how poorly he's driven the golf ball, only because you got to work on all aspects of the game before you came back. How did you not get that right?
Well, but what you continue to hear, and this is what is puzzling. Everyone who you talk to will tell you this. If you watch him warm up,
looks good on the range.
He's for some reason the only part of his game that he's not able to take from the range to the course is the driver, because everyone is saying what a clinic he's putting on the range before the round, and that's crazy.
And then everybody says he swings too hard when he gets to the golf course with his driver. And how do you not hear that? How do you not know that? Are you that consumed with ball speed and clubhead speed and 325 yards down the fairway when you know that you can grab your 7-iron from 188 and knock it close? I stand as one who is dumbfounded by why he doesn't get that part of it. And maybe there's something in him that says, oh, I get it, but I'm going to fix it. You know, I'll drive it better. I'll go down hard driving it better. But I don't get that. And it just takes one 3-wood swing to see he's got that club under much more control than he does the driver. I'm dumbfounded by how he came back with the driver.
Is it a thought by him that there are places at Augusta that he is going to need to hit driver? I mean, does he feel like, okay, I've got to be able to hit driver because I'm going to need it on one. I'm going to need it on two. I've got to be able to hit it on 15 or on 18. I need to be able to hit it. So is he continuing to beat his head against the wall just because he knows he's going to need it? Or do you think he does it all?
I don't think if he thinks he needs it a lot, I think he's wrong. I think two is a challenging hole for him. I think, you know, he can't go right to left. I think two's going to be a challenge for him with that driver. So I don't know what he does. You know, the question comes, does he feel like he's got to hit two and two every day? No, you don't. You make your four some other way. I don't think he has to do that. I don't think he has to hit drive. You know, you can hit your 3-wood 285 to 300 yards. How is that not long enough on just about any golf course? You know, one may be problematic, especially if a cool breeze kicks up and gets in your face. All right, well, okay, one hole. But for the, I don't, you know, I just don't think he has to do that.
And again, we're talking about a guy who you have to think knows this. Once upon a time, he went out to the British Open, sized up the course, and said, I'm going to hit 2-iron off the tee every time, and he blew away the field.
Yeah, I don't know if 42 years old is in his head, and he just feels like he's got to keep it up with the young kids? I don't know the answers to that, and I don't know that he knows the answers to that. I don't know how it is to be driven when you are the best person on the planet doing what you do, that, you know, I'm going to continue to be that person. That means I've got to hit this driver straight, and these guys are hitting at 338 yards, so I've got to do that. I don't understand a lot of what I've seen on the comeback.
John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Wanted to ask you about the report that came out from the USGA this week regarding distance. It seemed, to use a phrase I used earlier, a little passive-aggressive in that we recognize there's been changes in distance, but we don't feel we need to do anything right now. Very, very strange report that came out. What were your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are it is two different games, the game that the professional plays and the game that the rest of us play. Don't screw with the game the rest of us play. Anybody? Anybody hit it too far? Any of us hit it way too far? No. You know, so I kind of felt this way with the anchored putter. Whatever happened, Tim Clark fell off the face of the earth when they didn't let him anchor the putter. I don't mess with us. You can, I have a hard time understanding how they're going to mess with them. I can't see them backing off the golf ball for professionals. I don't see living in a world where that happens. And I think they might come to understand how to prepare a golf course a little bit better. 10 under, Copperhead's a nice golf course. Might be 10 under that wins this week. That's fine.
Well, those are my thoughts. You know, all this was coming about as we were playing Riviera and we were down at the Honda. And, you know, single digit under par is a player and a winner in those tournaments. And, you know, to me, Riviera, I feel, is one of the most perfect golf courses on planet Earth. Sure, it's adjusted with the times in terms of distance, but the way that course is set up and the way they bring in the rough and the trees and everything else, and the greens are so firm, that, like you said, if you set up that golf course, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, they've taken the driver out of my hands. I'm sorry. Hit something else. You know, Harbortown, Hilton Head's a great example of that. I just prepare the golf course a little bit differently for these guys. Maybe that's problematic because you're messing with a golf course for 1 week out of the year and you've got members 51 weeks out of the year. I don't know. But I have a hard time believing we're going to go bifurcation, that we're going to back this golf ball up for them and keep a golf ball for us. I don't think anything's going to change, and I think they kind of realize it, and I think they were probably happy to see what the distance is, what 6 yards or whatever it is over the years. You know, yeah, there are some guys who can hit it really far. Not everybody, maybe 10, 20 of them hit it really far. The rest of them hit it a long way, but it doesn't have to change all the game for all of us.
Well, and I saw where Billy Horschel and a couple other guys were putting out the stats off of their irons. And what they were saying is, okay, sure, I may hit the driver a little further than I did, but I'm still hitting my irons the exact same distance that I did in college within, you know, percentages of yards. So why isn't anyone taking the data off the irons? Does it just not fit the popular narrative, so people choose to ignore that?
Well, and who's upset about all of this? Writers and media and things. I mean, I don't know. I'm asking.
There's an old guard out there that is really, really upset that we can't take the U.S. Open to these classic old venues anymore. Well, you know what? The way I look at it, Bobby Jones won titles in the 1920s that we can't use those venues anymore either, and they couldn't use them in the 50s. That's just the way it works, right?
It does, but I think that's a two-fold conversation in that, yeah, we can't take them to the old venerable venues anymore, but we're not building a lot of 8,000-yard golf courses either. There's not a lot of new golf courses that are going to be built to accommodate these guys and their distance. So we do have to kind of play with the ones we have now, because there aren't going to be that many new ones. And there's but so much backing up we can do on most of these golf courses. I just shake my head, and things at the Athletic Club and at Muirfield Village, I shake my head when Jack's got to back up a tee, then you got to cross over the first hole because the tee on the 10th hole is to the right of the fairway. It's just stupid. It's just stupid. They don't have the land to do this. So I do think it's a twofold conversation. The venerable old spots are difficult to use, and we're not going to start building 8,000-yard golf courses. We got to play with the ones we got.
And where you are, I mean, if it progresses, apparently Augusta National will just eventually buy Augusta Country Club and just move everything further to the left. Get you out of here on this. John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Speaking of Augusta, anytime I have you on the phone, I like to ask, what's going on there? What's the scuttlebutt? What's the rumors? What's happening behind the vines and hedges and bamboo that we don't know about?
Nothing bigger than this. Nothing. The media will no longer be allowed in the member pro shop.
What a catastrophe.
Nothing bigger than that.
That is huge.
Unbelievable.
What did we do to get barred from the member pro shop?
We were lucky to be in it in the first place.
He's our boots on the ground in Augusta, John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. And up next, it's one of the rites of spring when it comes to golf in the area, the Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament at Springfield in Fort Mill. Golf director Mike Zimke takes Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. There, Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Joining us now, Mike Zimke, the golf director for the upcoming Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament in Fort Mill. Mike, I always consider this tournament to be one of the touchstones, the signs that spring has arrived, and that's the Strawberry Festival Tournament that takes place at Springfield in Fort Mill. And dang it, if it's not right on top of us.
Yeah, it's coming quick. We're excited about it. Springfield's a great venue, and to your point, spring is in the air. The peach trees are starting to blossom down here in Fort Mill, so it's time to get the clubs out.
Yeah, it's one of the. It always takes place in April, and this year, what is it? It's April. I guess registration ends on April 13th. That's what I'm seeing. When is the actual date on the tournament?
It's Tuesday, May 1st.
May 1st. That's right, because it's one of the first tournaments of the year where you have an early start time, an early shotgun. But everybody's in shorts, it's warm enough to do that, and you're loading up your cooler and you're popping Claritin. That's what I always think about the Strawberry Festival, because everything is starting to bloom and attack you all at once.
That's the truth. We have been blessed the last few years with some nice weather. I think last year it was 78 or 80. So yeah, shorts were out everywhere.
Mike, you've been doing this for 3 years. What's your favorite memory of this golf tournament that you've witnessed in person?
Oh, man, to be honest with you, so one of the special needs classes over at Fort Mill High School, at Nation Ford High School, painted a bunch of golf tees for us. They painted the stems of them red, and then the top where you actually put the golf ball on it green, like a strawberry. And they came over and, put those out in all the golfers' bags. And, some of the kids came out to do that, and we just got to chat with them and take pictures, and you could just see that they put so much time and effort into doing that. That was probably the neatest thing that I've seen doing the tournament.
I totally remember those tees, but I had no idea about the story behind them.
Yeah. Actually, so the 2 years ago was the first time they did it, and then last year they came back and did it, and they put a little flyer in the bag, because a lot of folks, I don't think.
Yeah, because I was there, the last time I played was 2 years ago, and I'm sitting there going, I remember we were all looking at those tees going, look how cool this is, and didn't think anything about it. We just thought you special ordered them.
No, they were handcrafted from some local kids at Nation Ford.
Mike Zimke is the golf director of the Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament. You need to sign up for this. Get your. Are they five-man teams?
Four-man teams.
It's one of the best tournaments, and it really is the ride of spring. What's the best way to do it? To go to the website?
Yeah, you can go to the website, the scstrawberryfest.com/golf. You'll see links in there. You can email me directly at Mike Zimke at ReinhartRealty.com, and I've got player registration forms. The tournament does tend to fill up pretty quick, so I would highly recommend getting your registration in prior to the April 13th deadline.
Now, not to brag or anything, but I have won this thing a couple of times, and as I'm looking at the picture of the current champions, Adam, Jason, Bo, and Braden, I'm looking at their score. Mike, let's be honest. They cheated. I mean, let's just throw it out there.
Yes, we are definitely a little concerned about that score, and we are going to be changing some mulligan guidelines this year, so we shouldn't see anything like that going forward.
Those guys are listening right now, cussing my name. Oh, my gosh. Mike, one of the things that I always love about your golf tournament, and this happens at several different ones you play throughout the year, but I think yours was one of the first I ever saw it happen. One of the attractions is when you make the turn, whether it be from 9 to 10 or from 18 to one, you have the putting competition where, you know, if you make the putt from 10 feet, then you qualify to make the longer putt. And there's always this great, grandiose prize if you make the longer putt. Have you ever seen anyone make that putt?
No, I have not. And this year will be a little different. We are going to be doing a putting contest kind of during the morning with a bunch of like free rounds of golf and sleeved golf balls and things like that. But we do have a hole-in-one for a new car this year on number 16. So that is something that we added last year as well and got a lot of great feedback from it. So no one has yet to win it, but Fort Mill Ford is excited to give it away.
Mike Zimke is the golf director with the Strawberry Festival, our guest taking Dead Aim. Let me give you the best story ever regarding giving a car away at a charity golf tournament. I wouldn't have believed it if I wasn't there to witness it myself. Was living in Augusta, Georgia, and was playing in a tournament over the summer at Midland Valley Country Club. And if memory serves, it had three nine-hole courses. Well, there was a par three that was 220 yards, and 200 of it was complete carry over a chasm of water. The pin was tucked back right on just this little peninsula. Couldn't have been 6 feet in diameter. I mean, there was no way you could make a hole in one. And when you saw what the prize was, you realized they were pretty safe. It wasn't a lease. It was a brand new Mercedes convertible.
Wow.
And the guys right in front of us all played, and they had a couple of decent shots. But one guy said, I'm going to use my mulligan here. And he jars the mulligan. And he starts to go insane. And at this point, I look at my group. I said, is this where we'd give him the bad news? And they said, well, we better, because otherwise there's going to be trouble at the end of the round. And we said, hey, bud, I just want to let you know. And here, you can have a beer. We all gave him a beer. I said, you can have this. It doesn't count when you use your mulligan. You'd have thought we told him that we just threw his firstborn in the fire. He was as mad and as brokenhearted as any person I've ever seen in my life.
The highs and lows so quick.
Oh, there you go. Mike Zimke, the golf director of the Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament. Again, registration is closing pretty soon, like inside the next month, yes?
Yeah. We're just about a month out.
Registration ends on April 13th. The website is scstrawberryfestival.com, and you can /golf or just click on the links to get to golf, and you'll be there. It's very easy to sign up. Look, if your business wants to get involved in sponsorships, that's still available.
There is. There's a few. We've got some pretty loyal sponsors from the last few years, but we do have a few T-Box slots available, so someone can come out and put a booth out on the tee. We get specially made flags for the event as well with those company logos, and it's a great chance to interact with the community and promote your business.
Yeah, and guys, this is one, and gals, we do not discriminate. Everyone gets to play in the Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament. If you're already thinking, oh God, is this one of these tournaments where as long as you can sign up, they'll take registrations? No, this is a capped field. They cap it at 32 teams, 128 golfers, and what that ensures, and I've played in this tournament several times, where we teed off in the morning, I was able to play the entire round and still get here to work in the afternoon at the radio station. So it makes for a fun, pleasurable round of golf that doesn't take 10 years to play.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we, you know, breakfast and lunch is provided as part of the registration. And, you know, the lunches will be served throughout the course. So you can kind of eat and play, you know, as the day goes on. And to your point, last year, I think we were done, you know, right around 3 o'clock with trophies handed out, prizes given away. And, you know, people still able to, you know, get home or get back to work, whatever they needed.
Mike Zimke, Golf Director, Strawberry Festival Golf Tournament. It is, like I said, it's one of the touchstones of the beginning of spring in the golf season. If you've participated in it before, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not, get your three buddies together and head out and play in this thing. It's fantastic. The website, again, is scstrawberryfestival.com/golf, or just go to scstrawberryfestival.com and follow the links to get to the golf tournament. Mike, thank you so much. We'll see you out there.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
April 13th is the deadline to register your team. Again, go to scstrawberryfestival.com, click on the events tab, and find the golf tournament. That's the events director, Mike Zimke. I'd also like to thank the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, and PGA Tour caddy, David Woosley, my man Woos, for joining us this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast on Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Search Taking Dead Aim. Weather-wise, well, today looks better than Sunday to tee it up and take on this game that breaks our hearts and haunts our soul. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors.